Today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares helps us keep things in perspective.
I'm telling you what, God, that's all God's saying to us, the clarifying principle of life. Whatever it is we're spending all this energy on, whatever it is we're working hard to invest in, you know what's ultimately important? Is that you and I become expert in love, because that will be our eternal job description forever. So we got to work on that. Not doing so well in that thing, not the best. And you know what? Apollos' sermons really are better than my Bible. Whatever. Just keep trying to love better.
If you've ever studied church history, you know that followers of Christ haven't always been the most united group. Sometimes the subject of contention was an important doctrinal difference. But there are plenty of cases where the issue at hand was relatively minor, even silly. So, through all the many debates and divisions, how do we keep our focus? Well, today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares reminds us of the lifelong quest that God has given each believer, showing Christ-like love.
Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse number 8. Here's how it's put. He says in verse 8, and you might remember or glance at verse 7, talking about love now, always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And then he says, you want to talk about the ultimate superlative? Here it is, verse 8, love never fails. And what he's talking about here is time, in terms of time. How do I know that? Because look where he goes next, verse 8. Where there are prophecies, now we're back to the problem. The problem was they viewed themselves based on what they do in the church. Oh, there's the prophet, Mr. Prophet. Wow, you're the guy who speaks for God. Wow, Mr. Prophet, aren't you special? And they thought that they were. And he says, here, just realize this. Love never fails, but let's talk about the role that you play there as Mr. Prophet. The prophecies, you know what? They'll cease. They'll cease. And tongues, this thing we really haven't unpacked because we'll get to it in, you know, a full throttle in chapter 14. Just know this, one day tongues will be stilled. And he says, what about knowledge? Now, whatever that is, that must be something that they're kind of polishing their nameplate with, because whatever that gift was, it was something they saw as very important. Here's the guy you go to, or here's the gal, really got the knowledge. They're connected with God, whether that was clearly supernatural or whatever. It was the important person. You want to know God's will for your life. You want to know what it is. You want the answers. Go to Mr. Knowledge over here. That's that. That gift of knowledge, he says, you got to realize it's going to pass away. Now, it started with this, love never fails. But all these roles that we play, they're all fleeting. Let's just start with that in verse number 8 and jot this down on your worksheet, okay? Here's the first observation in the passage. When it comes to love versus who I am and what role I play in this world and in our church, I need to, number one, keep myself in perspective. Keep yourself in perspective. Just recognize this. It is such a far distant second to the real issue, and that is, Mike, how you doing? Well, let's talk about how well I'm loving people this week. Is that my motive for what I do? And that sounds familiar because we've dealt with that from the beginning of this chapter. And that is, no matter if you're in the worship team singing or in the back room changing diapers or whether you're serving on the mission field or leading a Bible study, whatever your role is that you find significance in and you think, well, this is the real question is, why are you doing it? That is important because the reality of your role will eventually change. The role is mutable. The role changes. The goal, it doesn't change. How I love people changes. That I love people should never change. That's the immutable goal, that I try to love people through the things that I do. That's the goal. And therefore, I don't ever try to fall into, at least we shouldn't as Christians, fall into saying, well, this is my role and that's your role, and that's the way we kind of relate. Well, we need to relate in that way in some instances. I'm still my son's dad, but I still recognize ultimately the real judge of my life is how well that I love my son in the role as his father. But recognizing very carefully that the roles change. One day I won't be my son's father, really, right? And that's not just a Hallmark card. Well, no, that's not true. You'll always be. Not really, no. As a matter of fact, when you get into the next verse of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, why don't we look at that? One day we're going to be in a whole different economy, and I'm not going to be dad anymore. It'll be different. Oh, it'll change even in this life. I mean, the roles are mutable and fleeting now, but talk about change. Wait till we get into the presence of God. Take a look at how it's put, verse 9. Right now, all of our knowledge, all of our knowing, All the insight we have, it's all in part. All the prophesying, wow, Apollos, Cephas, Paul, they're so great, they know everything. No, they don't. They prophesy in part. But when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. And he uses an illustration, verse 11, when I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child, but when I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. What are you talking about? Verse 12. Well, here's another example. It's like looking at a reflection in a mirror, but it's a poor reflection. Mirrors in the first century, they were terrible, right? You looked and it was cloudy, you couldn't quite see, it wasn't always flat. He says, that's what it's like. It's like looking in your mirrors, and the mirrors aren't perfect. You'd much rather see face to face. By the way, that's a key phrase in Scripture. One day we will see him face to face. Right now we know in part, bottom of verse 12, then we'll know fully, even as I'm fully known. How well does God know you right now? Inside and out. How well do you know God? Not very well. But one day, we'll all know God. How well? Perfectly. Now think about that. Now he's saying, listen, here's another motivating factor. You may not see the connection right away. We'll build the bridge. Are you ready? Number two on your outline. He's taking our attention and he's having us focus on eternity, focusing on the ultimate eschaton, the wrapping up of all things. Number two, put it this way. Let's keep our focus on eternity. Why would Paul, at the end of chapter 13, when he's trying to get us to love one another, why would he focus us on the end of all things? Why would he focus us on eternity? Because here's the bottom line. One day you and I will be in a perfect place, face to face with a perfect God. You will be perfect because you'll see him as he is. And I will be perfect because I'm going to see him as he is. And we're going to be in a perfect place, perfect people, worshiping a perfect God, serving a perfect God for all eternity. Do you think we'll have any problems with each other then? I don't think so. We have problems now? Potentially. Why? Because you're not perfect and I'm not perfect. And my default mode is, you bug me. So what I'm saying is, love says, no, I'm going to fight the you bug me tendency, and I'm going to try to love. And one thing that helps me love you now is we're moving toward a perfect place, perfect relationship. I'm perfect, you're perfect. And you know what? Anything that might at this point drive us apart will not matter then, because I'm going to be like him, you're going to be like him. Man, none of it will matter. Why would you be tempted to gossip about someone this week? You know what? It won't matter. It won't matter 100 years from now. Why would you be tempted to hold a grudge against someone and not forgive them? It's not going to be relevant 100 years from now. Why is it that you would have a feud that would last with someone where you'd keep a chip on your shoulder about it? None of that will matter a million years from now. All the little things we fight about will not matter. And Paul's saying, can you keep a focus on eternity? Here's two great passages to lay side to side sometimes. 2 Peter 3 and 1 Peter 3. These are two great ones. We can put them in order. 1 Peter 3 and 2 Peter 3. 1 Peter 3, verses 8 and 9, talk about the fact that there's always a connection between my living, here's the great words, harmoniously, sympathetically, and compassionately and humbly toward you. There's a connection between that and my focus on the fact that one day God is preparing us to inherit a blessing. We're heading to the party. And that, in some way, is connected to the fact that I'm going to live with you, I love the words, harmoniously, sympathetically, compassionately, and humble. Now, 2 Peter 3 says this, and here's the same theme, the same idea, and he gives us the harsh realities of it. And that is this, that everything we know down here, and I might add, subdirectory, everything we argue about down here, and I might add there, everything that really frustrates us about each other, all of it will be wrapped up, thrown into the divine trash compactor. He will hit start and it'll all go away. Here's how it's put. The day of the Lord will come like a thief. Thieves don't let you know when they're coming, right? They come unannounced. Christ's going to come unannounced like a thief. And then he says he's going to take the heavens, the current heavens, and the current earth, wad it all up, destroy it with fire. Everything in the world is going to be burned up. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, here comes a great rhetorical question. What kind of people ought we to be? Answer, we ought to live holy and godly lives as we constantly, I love this, look forward to the day of God's coming and speed it. As we think about the fact that everything here will be destroyed, the elements will be destroyed with heat, in keeping with God's promise, though, he says, we're looking forward to the new heaven. We're looking forward to the new earth, the home of righteousness. So then, dear friends, since you're looking forward to this, then make every effort to be found spotless, blameless, and at peace with him, not arguing in the limo on the way to the church. Don't, see, stop it. Stop arguing. And the way I always like to think about it when it comes to temporal and eternal, we're sitting here arguing in our one-bedroom apartment about what to hang on the wall. When the Bible says at any moment Christ is going to come back with the limo, pick us up, and take us to the 100,000-square-foot mansion on the cliffs of Newport Beach that he's prepared for us. Why are we arguing about, you know, what kind of carpet we should have in our apartment? Let's stop arguing. Let's get along here. Let's love each other. So Paul takes our focus and says, think of eternity, guys. What do you think about that? Keep your focus on eternity. It's going to make a big, big, big difference. Then he ends with this. The logic continues. Verse 13. Let's turn back to 1 Corinthians 13:13. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 13. Last verse in the chapter. He says this in verse 13. Now these three remain. And though commentators argue about it, I think the now means now in terms of time. Now, if I've gotten past trying to compare what I do, you work there, I do this, I'm more important because I have, if we've gotten past all of that, we still have some, you know, a focal point here. And the focal point is to focus on the virtues of the Christian life, such as faith, hope, and love. All of those are important. As a matter of fact, it doesn't matter where you work in the church, it doesn't matter what you do in the world, it doesn't matter what your skills are, what your gifts are, we are to focus on the virtues of the Christian life, like faith, hope, and love. What's faith? I trust in God, a God I can't see, a God I've never met, a God that's out there somewhere, but I believe His promises, I believe His word, I trust Him. Right? Without faith, impossible to please God. I got to believe that He is and that He's a rewarder of those who seek Him. Great. I'm going to work on faith. And I'm going to work on hope, because I need hope. And given that much of the New Testament was written against the backdrop of persecution and suffering, they were constantly saying, we got to hang on to the truth. We got to just keep plowing on because we're going to get there and God's going to vindicate us and everything's going to be cool one day. So I'm going to keep on hoping. And love. Now, well, that trio is all over the scripture. But here he makes a final concluding prioritizing statement. The greatest of these is love. Now, why would he say that based on the context? Because what's the context? Some things last and some things don't. How much will you really need to work on trusting God when you're in the kingdom, watching the news report about the Messiah who's now on your 52-inch plasma TV in your little, you know, digs there, and all of a sudden, here's Christ saying, okay, today, the weather in Jerusalem is, and I love you guys, and today we're going to do that. You won't need a lot of faith, right? Am I right? You'll be face-to-face with the Messiah. And what about hope? Got to hang in there, man. We're going to, one day God will, God's going to rule on the throne. You won't need much hope. Hope's going to be fulfilled. Your hope will be completely satisfied. But there'll be one virtue among all the Christian virtues that will be front and center. And that is you and I will still feel obligated and be obligated to do what? To love. Number three on your outline. Let's just put it like this. Jot it down if you would. Number three, keep love as your top priority. It is the greatest thing we could focus on. It is the most important thing. A passage I like is there in Romans 13:8, where it talks about the fact that none of us should have any past due bills. That's what it says. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. Now, if you're a good, you know, person with a fairly high credit score, when you have a past due bill, it nags you and it just bugs you. Am I right? I hope. Not at me, even if you got bad credit. That should bother me. Oh, yes, that's right. We're late on that payment. That bugs me. It says, you shouldn't have any past due payments. Figure out your finances. But the bottom line is, you should feel past due on loving. You should feel past due on, I haven't shown enough love to Mike this week. Wow, that would be great. And I should feel past due on the fact that I haven't shown you enough love this week. Wow, I got to get to that. I got to love them more. I ought to feel that continuing debt. How long will that last? How long will it last? Well, for a few years. For the rest of this life. For eternity. How long will I have to focus and work at loving? Forever. That'll be easier when you're perfect. But I got to work on it forever. It's going to be my priority forever. Picture it this way. Let's say I'm the ultimate spiritual prognosticator. I can come into your house and tell you all about your family. Let's just say you got kids in the family. They're all great, you know, in school. And I come in and I say, okay, I'm going to tell that guy right there is going to be an auto mechanic. That person is going to grow up to be, you know, whatever. Oh, but this kid here, this middle kid of yours, I just want to tell you this. God's given me some insight on that kid. This is not true. It's an illustration. I don't have the skill. What if I could look at him and say, I just want to tell you, right there, that kid and his brain and the things he's going to do in mathematics will change things in this world radically. As a matter of fact, he will win the Nobel Prize for mathematics. You got one right here that's going to change the world because of his or her insight on mathematics. See ya, and I leave. Now you're looking at this kid going, whoo. Now, let's say that kid goes to school, goes down to Shorecliffe, you got junior high. You know, in the back of your mind, going to be the Nobel Prize winning mathematician of the world. And your kid comes home and says, you know, Dad, I'm really struggling in art class, man. They want me to draw this tennis shoe, and I just can't get it, and it doesn't look right. And I think he may flunk me in art. What are you going to say? You're going to say, how's algebra going, right? Are you working hard on that? When can we get you into geometry? And are you about ready for calculus? Whatever. It'd be nice if you could pass art class. Yeah, it'd be good. Or what if he came home one day and said, well, but you know, Todd, he can throw the football a mile, and I'm out there. I can't throw the football very far. I may not make the team this year. Okay, no problem. Let's go pick out a Texas Instrument calculator today. You know, I don't know. You got different priorities for that kid. Because you're thinking, it doesn't really matter if you can throw a football. It really is not a big deal if you flunk art class. Your destiny is to change the world with mathematics. So, you know, whatever, that stuff, it'd be good. I don't want my kid to flunk out of every other thing, but what I'm really concerned about is math. I'm telling you what, that's all God's saying to us, the clarifying principle of life. Whatever it is we're expending all this energy on, whatever it is we're working hard to invest in, you know what's ultimately important? Is that you and I become expert in love, because that will be our eternal job description forever. So we got to work on that. Not doing so well in that thing, not the best. And you know what? Apollos' sermons really are better than my Bible. Whatever. Just keep trying to love better. Speaking of investments, I thought of this week. I've told you several times I grew up in Long Beach. A lot of my illustrations are based on Long Beach. In Long Beach, where I grew up, I grew up not far from Signal Hill. Signal Hill is a 2.2 square mile city that is surrounded by Long Beach. If you're familiar with that, you know, it's the little bump on the canvas of Long Beach, right? Well, we live not far from there, and there's this little breakfast place that my dad used to like to go to, and every now and then, boys would go out for omelets, you know. So we'd pack up the car, we'd go to Signal Hill, this little restaurant, and we, you know, eat these, you know, Denver omelets and the ham and cheese omelets. That was great. I'll never forget the way the place was decorated. It was decorated like trying to look old-fashioned, you know, with the paneling and all that. Well, on the inside in the restaurant, all they had was black and white pictures of Signal Hill, circa 1925, 1930. Do you know anything about Signal Hill in 1925, 1930? Yeah, local people? What did Signal Hill look like in the 1920s and 30s? Looked like a porcupine, right? It was covered with oil rigs. Oil derricks everywhere. As a matter of fact, in reading about this, the oil derrick supports, you know how the big beams and they have the X's, they actually crisscrossed each other. That's how close together these drilling holes were all over the 2 mile square of Signal Hill. It was incredible. I was sitting around with Jack George, one of the leaders in our church, Dr. George, and Jack George and I were just talking, we were talking about Long Beach for some reason, and he just blurted this out in the middle of our talk. He said, you know, my great-grandmother, speaking of Long Beach, he said, my great-grandmother, great-granny George, once was offered an opportunity down, you know, way down there at the turn of the century, not this one, the other one, way back when, 100 years ago, to buy half of Signal Hill, a 1 square mile parcel of Signal Hill. I was like, really? So yeah, I said, well, what happened? Well, you know, our family was from Minnesota, and we'd spend the winters out here in California, and they really liked California, and they were thinking of buying some property, but they thought a mile of it. I mean, this is too much, and it's too big, and we really like Minnesota, and so, you know, we want to spend a little more time in Minnesota, and it's kind of cool. We don't want to get tied down with property, and so, yeah, whatever. Now, what you need to know is Standard Oil, around the turn of the century, came and started working on Signal Hill. Now, they were drilling all over Southern California. There's a lot of oil beds around here. Well, they tried Signal Hill because they thought their research said there's probably oil there. Well, they drilled, they couldn't find any. Done, dry. So they gave up. So they thought, well, what we'll do is we'll just sell this to people. They can build their houses on it. Well, apparently, Granny George was one of them who was offered half of the hill, which was like, again, some measly, ridiculous price, like, I don't know, $17 or something. It was crazy. She could have bought half the hill. Well, she turned it down, obviously. And Shell Oil came in and said, well, we'll give it a try. Shell Oil came, drilled in 1921, and hit oil. Black gold, you know, Texas tea, whatever you call it, right? Oil came out of Signal Hill. Do you recognize this? That in that 2 square mile piece of real estate, it was the richest oil parcel in the entire world. They pulled out of Signal Hill over 1 billion barrels of oil in its history. It was the most profitable and richest oil endeavor ever, Signal Hill was. I thought to myself, had Granny George purchased that piece of property, you and I wouldn't this afternoon be pulling into the Shell station to buy our gas. We'd be pulling into the George station to buy our gas. We'd have in our card, in our wallets, the George, you know, oil company credit card. She and I would never be sitting around talking to the heir of the, you know, the oil George fortune. It would have changed their lives forever. They would be filthy rich. They'd probably, I mean, written in history, but who knows? But instead, parceled up a thousand ways, everybody got in on it. Everybody got a little piece of Signal Hill. And great granny George missed it. For Minnesota, by the way. And I'm thinking to myself, as I study this passage, that must be a lot like God's perspective on all this. God leans over the rails of heaven and looks at us scurrying around here like a bunch of little insects on the planet this week, looking to see what we're going to invest in. And here's this target right here, and it's called loving each other, right? But you know, if we invest there, it's going to be a sacrifice from all the things that we're comfortable with and that we like. We have to leave the little Minnesotas of our life behind. And we're going to have to say, you know what? I'm going to do this, but to do this, I may sacrifice a couple clients over here. I may not have as much free time for myself. We may not be able to take that vacation. Okay, but you know what? God told me to do this, so I'm going to invest right here. One day, by the way, the curtain's going to come down on this world, on your life, on my life, and God is going to say, okay, let's divvy it all up here. How did it go? And a lot of us are probably going to feel a lot like the George family. We really missed it because we spent a lot of time in Minnesota and not a lot of time drilling here. This is what God wanted us to do. And it's more than just an attaboy we're looking for. I'm not saying it's the thing that drives us. It's not a crass motive here. But you do recognize when he says to us, well done, good and faithful servant, he's then going to swing open the doors to the eternal kingdom and he's going to say, welcome, enter into this blessing, this kingdom that was prepared by our Father, the joy of heaven. Man, it's for you. And our experience in that eternal wedding reception is going to be based on our investment and how much of that place called love we worked on every week. And we got a 7-day opportunity again till we meet again. A 7-day opportunity for us to go. It's time for us to go and work on this thing that God told us to work on. It will feel counterintuitive. It will feel like, why? And they don't deserve it. Or this is a big sacrifice. Or this is a lot of work. And it's okay. One day it'll be worth it.
A challenging end to our series called Prompted by Love from Pastor Mike Fabares and Focal Point. Now, if you missed any part of this series or would like to listen again, be sure to visit focalpointradio.org. And then we've got a great resource we're recommending this month to help you put the love of God into action in your daily life. It's a book called Side by Side, Walking with Others in Wisdom and Love, and it's by respected Christian counselor Edward T. Welch. Everyone faces heartache from time to time. Perhaps it's an illness, the death of a loved one, relational troubles, or an ongoing struggle with sin. Whatever the specific situation, Ed Welch offers biblical guidance and encouragement to help you walk with your brothers and sisters in Christ, sharing their burdens and showing the love of God. God uses relationships and conversations between ordinary Christians to work extraordinary miracles in the lives of His people. And if that's something you want to be a part of, be sure to request your copy of Side by Side today. It comes as our way of saying thanks for your financial support of this ministry. Now here's the number to call, 888-320-5885. Or if it's easier, you can donate online at focalpointradio.org. And thank you for your support. It truly makes a difference in the lives of those who listen, ensuring that these daily messages remain available without cost being a barrier for anyone who wants to join us. One more time, here's the phone number, 888-320-5885, or go to focalpointradio.org. And one last note before we close, if you're planning any travel this summer, don't forget that you can take Focal Point with you by downloading the free Focal Point mobile app. It makes it easy to listen wherever you go. Just search for Focal Point in your app store. Well, I'm your host, Dave Drewy. Glad to have you with us. And be sure to join us tomorrow when we'll begin a new series called Life's Last Enemy. We'll be talking about life, death, and resurrection. Tuesday on Focal Point.
Hey there, Pastor Mike here. We're almost out of time, but before we go, I wanted to personally invite you to contact us here. Let us know how we can be praying for you. Head on over to focalpointradio.org and click the contact page. or send me a note on Facebook, facebook.com/PastorMike, or twitter.com/PastorMike. Can't wait to hear from you.
Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.